This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump clashed at the start of their debate Thursday night, arguing pointedly about the U.S. economy, foreign affairs, abortion rights, and migration across the Mexican border into the United States. At one point, Trump said the U.S. is no longer respected, blaming Biden. Biden retorted, looking at Trump, "This is the worst president in American history. This guy has no sense of American democracy." Biden at 78 and Trump at 7 make that Biden at 81 and Trump at 78 are the two oldest candidates ever to seek the U.S. presidency in a race that opinion polls has been deadlocked for months, that it is. Thursday's face-off marked the first time the two U.S. presidents have ever debated each other. The 90-minute televised debate took place far earlier than normal, more than 4 months before the November 5th election day. Protesters were back on Nairobi streets Thursday, saying they didn't think the olive branch offered by Kenyan President William Ruto was genuine. VOA's Nairobi bureau chief, Mariama Diallo, was on the scene.
The message of protesters to the president was clear. Demonstrators tell VOA they are not scared to protest even if tear gas is being fired left and right.
The police are trying to scare us away, people who have come to peacefully protest the president. For him, it's time for him to go and resign.
Another protester says the president shouldn't be overtaxing the population.
Because government has taken a lot of loan from the World Bank. We haven't seen what the loan has done. It has not benefited us as citizens of Kenya. It has only gone to few specific individuals. Let those who are involved in corruption be brought to justice.
Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
And for more news, as always, join us at our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. Scores of sick and injured Gazans were allowed into Egypt on Thursday, marking the first medical evacuations since the travel crossing into Egypt was shut down in May. Meantime, Israeli forces moved into Gaza City neighborhoods Thursday and ordered Palestinians to move south in an operation described as the final stages of fighting against Hamas militants. Here in the U.S., AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer reports that there are now criminal indictments for the slow response at a school shooting in the state of Texas.
Former school's police chief Pete Arredondo and former officer Adrian Gonzalez have reportedly been indicted over their role in the slow police response to the 2022 massacre at a Texas elementary school that left 19 children and two teachers dead. The indictments by a grand jury include multiple counts of felony child endangerment and abandonment. They are the first officers to face criminal charges in one of the deadliest school shootings in U.S. history. Both men are expected to turn themselves in. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports on a nationwide sweep of suspects accused of running health care fraud schemes that harmed patients and taxpayers.
The Justice Department has arrested nearly 200 people accused of selling unsafe drugs and fake services, generating billions in profits. Attorney General Merrick Garland says 193 doctors, nurses, and pharmaceutical executives were arrested in a two-week crackdown.
You cannot hide your crimes.
He describes fake medicines in Florida for HIV, millions of doses of Adderall for people without ADHD, and a scam to rip off Medicare in Arizona. Four people arrested for performing amniotic skin grafts on elderly and hospitalized patients.
Unnecessary, highly expensive wound grafts to be applied to elderly Medicare patients.
Garland says two company owners live lavishly off that scheme with $52 million cash in the bank. I'm Jackie Quinn.
European Union leaders agreed on Friday to nominate Ursula von der Leyen of Germany for a second five-year term as president of the European Commission, the EU's powerful executive body. At the summit, at the bloc's 27 national leaders also picked Portuguese Premier Antonio Costas as the future chair of the European Council meetings and selected Estonia Prime Minister Kaja Kallas as the next EU foreign policy chief. For more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
the Voice of America. I'm James Buffy in Washington. Today is Friday, June 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Biden and former President Trump faced off on Thursday night in their first debate of the 2024 presidential election.
I supported Roe v. Wade, which had three trimesters. First time is between the woman and the doctor. Second time is between the doctor and an extreme situation.
The U.S. denies Zimbabwe's claims that the U.S. is militarizing Zambia. Central African Republic official and civil society called for local elections boycott. Kenya's high court gave government 2 days to declare the scope and the duration of military deployment against protesters. Meanwhile, protesters took to the streets again on Thursday, this time asking President Ruto to resign.
We have to move to the second level. We have to move to occupy State House until the president resigns.
And South Sudan church leaders call for change. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump faced off on Thursday night in their first debate of the 2024 presidential election. Both candidates addressed the divisive issue of abortion and the U.S. Supreme Court overturning of Roe v. Wade. First, former President Trump.
If you look at this whole question that you're asking, a complex but not really complex. 51 years ago, you had Roe v. Wade, and everybody wanted to get it back to the states. Everybody, without exception. Democrats, Republicans, liberals, conservatives. Everybody wanted it back. Religious leaders. And what I did is I put three great Supreme Court justices on the court, and they happened to vote in favor of killing Roe v. Wade and moving it back to the states. This is something that everybody wanted. Now, 10 years ago or so, they started talking about how many weeks and how many this, getting into other things. But every legal scholar throughout the world, the most respected, wanted it brought back to the states. I did that. Now the states are working it out. If you look at Ohio, it was a decision that was, it was a, an end result that was a little bit more liberal than you would have thought. Kansas, I would say the same thing. Texas is different. Florida is different. But they're all making their own decisions right now.
For his part, President Biden says he supports Roe v. Wade.
I supported Roe v. Wade, which had three trimesters. The first time is between the woman and the doctor. Second time is between the doctor and an extreme situation. The third time is between the doctor, I mean, between the woman and the state. The idea that the politician, that the founders wanted the politicians to be the ones making the health is ridiculous. That's the last, no politician should be making that decision. A doctor should be making those decisions. That's how it should be run. That's what you're going to do. And if I'm elected, I'm going to restore Roe v. Wade.
Means he can take the life of the baby in the ninth month and even after birth, because some states, Democrat run, take it after birth. Again, the governor, former governor of Virginia.
For 51 years, that was the law. 51 years, Constitutional Scholarship said it was the right way to go. 51 years, and it was taken away because this guy put very conservative members on the Supreme Court. He takes credit for taking it away.
That was President Joe Biden speaking last night during the first debate between he and former President Donald Trump. Both candidates also discussed the issue of immigration. First, President Biden, followed by former President Trump.
We significantly increased the number of asylum officers. Significantly, by the way, the Border Patrol endorsed me, endorsed my position. In addition to that, we found ourselves in a situation where when he was president, he was taking, separating babies from their mothers, putting them in cages, making sure they were, the families were separated. That's not the right way to go.
I really don't know what he said at the end of that sentence. I don't think he knows what he said either. Look, we had the safest border in the history of our country. The border, all he had to do was leave it. All he had to do was leave it. He decided to open up our border, open up our country.
Former President Donald Trump and President Joe Biden speaking last night at their first presidential debate. Joining us now to talk about the debate is VOA's senior Washington correspondent Caroline Presutti. Good morning to you, Caroline, and welcome to Daybreak Africa.
Good morning, James. It's good to be here.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. What is your general impression of the first presidential debate of the 2024 election?
Well, I think it was very different than anyone expected. I think that not many policy ideas came out. No one really came up with any new ideas or novel ideas. There was a lot of sniping between the two of them. I'm the greatest, you're the greatest, you're the worst, you're the worst. I mean, you were left with the idea, oh my gosh, who do I believe? Who's telling the truth and who is faking it? I mean, there were some highlights, but not as we expected. It was quiet, which was nice. You definitely heard the two candidates. However, it was very difficult at times to understand Biden. He had a raspy voice. Was it hoarse? Is he sick? We don't know. But I think that just contributes to the impression that he is 81. He is in an advanced age, and that didn't play well for him when he's speaking to so many millions of American voters tonight.
You know, I'll get to the policy discussion later. As you mentioned, the debate was quiet. So how effective, therefore, do you think the cutoff of the microphone was compared to the 2020 debate?
I think that was a great idea because you could actually hear each person and you could hear him finish his statement. Now, there were times when the other candidate would say something, but you really couldn't hear it because it wasn't directed at the microphone. It was across the way at the other podium. So the benefit was in the listener and in the viewer that they could actually hear what the person was saying. I liked that. I liked the idea of no audience too, because you only heard the questions and you heard the answers, and then you'd hear the rebuttal, then you could hear a re-rebuttal, and then you'd hear another question. It was good television in that sense, and good radio in that sense, that you could concentrate and focus on the words.
You know, much was made about both President Biden and former President Trump's ages, especially President Biden's. How do you think both candidates handle the issue of age?
They've said this before, so this wasn't anything new, but former President Trump said, I took two tests, I aced them, he took none, I'm in good shape. He talked about his golf game. President Biden said, I'll match you for a game of golf at any time. I have a 6 handicap. President Trump looked at him incredulously. I mean, who knows what his handicap is, but really. And then Biden said about Trump, he said, this guy is 3 years younger and less competent. And then he kind of pivoted at that point. That's about all he said about Trump's age. But then he related it to some statements that Trump made earlier. He said, the idea that we were a failing country, I've never heard a president talk like that before. As if to say, the idea that the former president is saying that this country is on its last breath, that we are laughed at, that we should be embarrassed. You know, you should have respect. It's almost as if Biden was saying, I can't believe a former president would ever say that about our country. Where is your patriotism? So I thought that was an interesting pivot, and it was certainly something that didn't have anything to do with age. But he did make a point in that statement.
Carolyn, the most recent polling points to the economy and democracy as some of the issues that voters are concerned about. How do you think the candidates dealt with these issues?
Well, I think when Biden was asked about, and I'm trying to find my question here, he was asked if he thought, okay, here it is. Do you believe tens of millions of Americans are likely to vote for President Trump? Who will be likely to vote for President Trump? Will be voting against democracy? And at that point, President Biden said yes. He's got a whole lot of issues he has to face. This is a guy that said Hitler has done good things. This guy has no sense of American democracy. Now, Trump turned that around in his statement when he was asked about January 6th. Instead of commenting on what was happening on January 6th, which he did later on in the debate, he said something like, well, on January 6th, our economy was good and unemployment was low. We had the lowest taxes ever. We were respected all over the world. Not really commenting on what was going on at the Capitol on January 6th. Now, he did say, remember, he had the speech on the Washington Mall when he encouraged his supporters to go to the Capitol. So he said on Democracy on January 6th, this is Trump speaking again. He said, I said peacefully and patriotically. So he was making that point that he did not incite violence. And then that point still is a question to be had for the analyst to discuss. But that's how that discussion went between Democracy and January 6th.
Caroline, thank you so much again for joining us on Daybreak Africa.
Absolutely. My pleasure, James.
Thank you very much. VOA Senior Washington Correspondent Caroline Presutti speaking with us live from our Washington studio. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, June 28th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sport. Protesters were back on Nairobi streets on Thursday, saying they didn't think that the olive branch offered by Kenyan President William Ruto putting a hold on an unpopular tax bill was genuine. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo was on the scene.
Police fired tear gas canisters to disperse crowds in Nairobi's commercial district where most businesses were closed. The message of protesters to the president was clear. Demonstrators tell VOA they are not scared to protest even if tear gas is being fired left and right.
The police are trying to scare us away, people who have come to peacefully protest. On my behalf, I'm here to peacefully protest that the president, for him, it's time for him to go and resign.
We've been being thrown tear gas all along. We don't have a problem with His Excellency. The only thing we are seeking for peace.
Another protester says the president shouldn't be overtaxing the population when ordinary Kenyans have not benefited from money borrowed by the government.
We want to hear the measures that he has put in place to curb high taxation. The high taxation has results because government has taken a lot of loan from IMF, from the World Bank. We as Kenyans, we haven't seen what the loan has done. It has not benefited us as citizens of Kenya. It has only gone to few specific individuals. So we are really requesting the president, let those who are involved in corruption be brought to justice.
In an address to the nation Wednesday, Kenyan President William Ruto said he's decided not to sign a controversial bill that included a series of tax increases. He spoke one day after more than 20 people were killed during protests against the bill that led to clashes with police. The president defended the proposed tax increases, saying the money would be used to help farmers and to employ teachers, among other priorities. He said it was necessary for Kenyans to discuss how to manage the country's budget and debt, and said he would engage with the young people of the nation. Earlier Wednesday, Frederick Odhiambo Ojiro, an activist and rapid response officer at human rights group Haki Africa, told VOA that he did not think the president's speech was sincere. He said protesters plan to camp outside the state house.
We have to move to the second level. We have to move to occupy state house until the president resigns, because the president also fell short of castigating the men and women in uniform that he had used to silence the masses. The president is not genuine in his statements. He was only trying to cover his face. We still have to press, we still have to demand that the atrocities that were committed by the president be accounted for.
When we spoke to Ojiro, he was in a hospital caring for comrades who were injured in the recent protest.
Currently, we have got 116 comrades who are still in the hospital, and more than 200 who were treated the other day at night and released.
The protesters were not able to access the state house Thursday because all the road leading to it were blocked by police. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
Kenya's High Court has given the government 2 days to declare the scope, duration, and the areas of deployment by the Kenyan Defense Forces, or the KDF. In a ruling on Thursday evening, the court said the government can continue to utilize the KDF to help the police deal with ongoing anti-tax protests. Mwangi Maina is a journalist with the Kenyan Foreign Policy Online publication. He tells me that the court was responding to a petition brought by the Law Society of Kenya challenging the deployment of the military to deal with peaceful protesters.
Kenyan court in Nairobi did allow the government to be able to continue with the deployment of the Kenya Defence Forces to assist the police in quelling the controversial finance bill protests that have been ongoing in Nairobi since last week. A petition had been filed by the Law Society of Kenya challenging the government's move to deploy the military forces in the streets to be able to quell violence, saying that this is illegal. But the court this evening did say that this is not illegal and allow the government to go ahead, but give the government 2 days to be able to state the scope, the duration and the areas of intervention where the Kenya Defence Forces will be able to be deployed. The Law Society held these particular duties that they had argued that this particular military deployment sent an alarming and chilling message to Kenyans who, you know, otherwise have wished to hold peaceful protests, and that this would give a scenario where the country seems like it's deciding back to becoming a police or a military state. So they were arguing that the police, which is supposed to deal with internal security issues, should be able to be deployed in all areas of the country where there are protests, and that in case of any violence, they'll be able to quell. But for the military to be called in and quell violence, which has been sparked by economic and political crisis in the country, then that would be a bit chilling and a bit, you know, an overkill and going overboard, because as we all know that the defense forces of any country are there to protect the country from any external threat.
The deployment of the military, has it had any effect on the protesters on Thursday?
Not quite really, but because the military has been very organized, well planned, very quiet. They have not yet got to lobby, just patrolling on the street with some heavy hardware equipment that many Kenyans have argued should be deployed in other parts of the country, volatile parts of the country, to be able to fight terror. However, what we saw today was a very unprecedented picture also, because when the military forces were deployed on the streets, we saw youthful protesters chanting and singing, you know, in Swahili saying, Jeshi ni yetu, loosely translated to mean that the military is ours, compared to the kind of scenario we saw when the police came, because the police kept on lobbing tear gas against the protesters.
Mwangi Maina is a Kenyan journalist with the Kenya Foreign Policy Online publication. He was speaking with us from the capital, Nairobi. The presidents of the Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda may meet very soon for talks aimed at establishing peace in the unrest-hit Eastern DRC, Angola said on Thursday. Angola has been mediating in the conflict in the Eastern DRC of the region of Kivu, where Rwanda-backed the M23 rebels have been fighting Democratic Republic of Congo forces since the late 2021. The French news agency AFP reports that in a bid to end the unrest, diplomatic efforts have been going on for several months to bring Rwanda President Paul Kagame and the DRC Congo President Felix Tshisekedi together. On Thursday, Angolan President João Lourenço said during a visit to Ivory Coast that, quote, we are currently negotiating at ministerial level with a view to being able to bring together very soon the two heads of state of the DRC and Rwanda for a direct exchange on the present need to reach a definitive peace, unquote. Zimbabwe police beat dozens of opposition supporters and arrested several outside a court in the capital Harare on Thursday after Citizens Coalition for Change, also known as Triple C Party, members were denied bail following their arrest 2 weeks ago. Reuters reports a Harare magistrate denied bail to the party's interim leader, Jameson Timba, and 78 activists arrested on June 16 for holding a political gathering, which authorities said was unauthorized. Timba took over as interim leader of the CCC after former leader Nelson Chamisa quit the party in January, alleging that it had been hijacked by the ruling ZANU-PF party. Police anti-riot units guarded the entrance to the court, and the arrests were made hours after President Emmerson Mnangagwa said those who were believed to be causing trouble would be dealt with. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport in Cameroon, where the Cameroon Football Federation, FECAFOOT, has confirmed the death of former Cameroon international Landry Nguemo. FECAFOOT said the 38-year-old died in a traffic accident on Thursday. The Yaounde-born midfielder played 42 times and scored 3 goals for the Indomitable Lions of Cameroon between 2006 and 2014, winning a runners-up medal at the 2008 Africa Cup of Nations. Staying with football news, World Football Governing Body FIFA has announced the lifting of the ban on Tanzania Football Club Young Africans to recruit players. Young Africans had been handed an indefinite ban after failing to pay the dues of Zambian striker Lazarus Kamboli. According to a statement issued by the Tanzania Football Federation, Yanga have paid Kamboli and are now free to recruit players as per the FIFA's rules and regulations. And now to Nigeria, where the National Football League in the United States has concluded its first talent identification camp in Nigeria as the league ramps up its search for prospective African players following similar trials in Ghana, Kenya and South Africa. The 3-day NFL combined style camp in Lagos gave talents from 10 African countries an opportunity to showcase their skills, where they will compete for invitations to programs that could see them make NFL rosters. 2-time Super Bowl champion and NFL ambassador Usi Umenyiora co-founded the Uprise with fellow Nigerian and former basketball star Ejike Ubuaja in 2020.
I think there are over 90 players right now currently in the NFL of Nigerian descent. There's over 100 players of African descent currently in the NFL. Nigeria is the most populous African country, a country with immense talent, and we need to give the people here as many opportunities as possible. A lot of people have connections to Nigeria, in particular, whether they're in Nigeria or outside of Nigeria.
And now to cricket, where South Africa made history on Thursday by booking their first ever spot in the finals of the T20 World Cup as captain Eden Makram and his team registered an emphatic 9-wicket win over Afghanistan in their semi-final clash at the Brian Lara Stadium, Taruba, Trinidad and Tobago. Riza Hendricks and Eden Makram saw them home on a difficult surface with a 55-run second wicket partnership. They led their team to 60 for 1 in 8.5 overs, sauntering home with 111 overs to spare after bowling out their surprise semi-final opponents for just 56. South Africa now progressed to Saturday's final in Barbados unbeaten as they look to win a World Cup for the first time. Ahead of the finals, Captain Eden Makram says there are some nerves amongst the players, but the mood is generally one of excitement and belief. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, June 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend, and we'll see you again on Monday morning.